Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our discussion of that one play. And in this case, that one play is perhaps the most famous in Ravens history, the Mile High Miracle, that eventually would bail out the Ravens from having a Ray Lewis retirement fest in that Denver game in 2012, send them the AFC Championship, and eventually the Super Bowl, where they were winners in Super Bowl 47. Joining me here to talk about it is Brian Jens. Brian, how you doing?
I'm good, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself and where people can talk football with you online in particular.
Sure. So I'm not a Baltimore native. I'm actually from Milwaukee County in Wisconsin. Not really a born and raised Ravens fan. When I was growing up, when I was in my teenage rebellious years, my rebellious phase was to cheer for the Ravens instead of the Packers. Huh. So my family and I went to a trip, family trip to Baltimore. I bought a t-shirt, and that was that. So not sure exactly what year that was, but I at least have been a Ravens fan since maybe a couple of years after that they moved to Baltimore.
All right, that's interesting.
Active mostly on Facebook at Brian Jens, or I interact sometimes on Twitter at Brian Jens VGC.
All right. Outstanding. Well, we appreciate having you, Brian. A little bit of the setup for this game, and I think a lot of people know it, but the Ravens had met the Broncos during the regular season. It did not go well for the Ravens in a game where they sat out a lot of their regulars. They lost 34-17, I believe, but they got drubbed a lot worse than that, in truth be told. They came into this game as 9-point underdogs. They had not beaten Peyton Manning since 2001. So it's been 11 years since they've beaten Peyton Manning at this point. The game started off very poorly for the Ravens. Of course, they didn't move the ball enough on the opening kickoff, and then gave up a 90-yard punt return to Trindon Holiday to go down 7. But they recovered from that. A couple quick touchdowns, went ahead. What were you noticing about the general tenor of the game early on?
So, I mean, it was kind of a back and forth game, right? So, like, if you look at the box score, right, the box score would have told you that it was kind of a tit for tat, right? That the first quarter, both teams had scored 14 points. So, you know, Denver went up 14 points, or Denver went up 7 points. And then, you know, the Ravens responded with that interception by Corey Graham. And then every quarter, you know, each team scored 7 points. You know, looking at the box score only, you wouldn't have known that prior to the end of the fourth quarter that the Ravens were in the position that they were.
It was truly a great back and forth game. Extraordinarily cold that day. Coldest I've ever been at a football game. Part of it being that it was a extra long game going into the second overtime, but windy and a very low wind chill. It was a game where Flacco's weather resistance and some of that made him great in January really showed through. He had a very solid game despite the weather. In fact, he had a very good game despite the weather, whereas Peyton Manning was completely affected by it. And he was supposedly was dumping his arm in ice before the game to try and get ready to play under these conditions. Whatever he did, he was fairly noodle arm during the game. It was a fairly, quick short pass game that he was throwing that I think was consistent with a lot of who Manning was late in his career.
He also had a couple of really, you know, cool touch passes that in some of those touchdowns. So he had one to Noshon Moreno in the end zone. He also had another one to a wide receiver, I think, where, I mean, it looked like vintage Peyton Manning at certain points. So if he was affected by the cold, it maybe didn't always look like that.
I don't disagree entirely, but by the time it got to overtime and later in that game in particular, it didn't look like he had much juice left. And a lot of their offense that day, of course, came from Trindon Holiday, who had the two big returns. You mentioned something at our production meeting, though, about the Ravens going after Champ Bailey.
So if you looked at every play that was going on throughout the game, you noticed that at least that part of the Ravens game plan had been to try to push the ball downfield. So I noticed that throughout the four quarters, there were several different occasions in which they had tried to push the ball at least 20 yards down the field. Not all of them obviously were successful, but, you know, I think part of the game plan was probably to try to challenge the secondary of the Broncos, and specifically Champ Bailey was beaten a couple of different times, at least for touchdowns. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so once down the middle of the field by Torrey Smith, that was the one that got the Ravens back in the game. A nice 59-yard throw from Flacco to Smith, or just beaten deep, did not have help. And then down the right sideline at the end of the half, where Torrey Smith adjusted back to the football, which that is not Champ Bailey to be not in position to make a play on that ball. He'd been very good about that in his career, generally speaking, and got himself overran the play slightly on that one in a way that allowed Torrey Smith to adjust back.
That was anyway, good adjustment by Torrey Smith to be able to come up over Champ Bailey on the catch there at the very end. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're back. We'll fast forward to 35-28, and the Broncos went ahead with 8 minutes ago or so, if I recall correctly, or earlier in the fourth quarter. The Ravens had more than one chance at it, if I recall, but they came back with another chance with about a minute and 15 to go after the Broncos declined to throw the ball on third down to try and get the first down.
Right. So it was a third down. They ran the ball to try to close the clock. And I think what's important to remember too is prior to that, right? So the previous possession, you know, on a third down, Jacoby Jones drops a pass from Flacco that would have continued a play. I think they were in field goal range that they ended up going for fourth down on that drive. And so like Jacoby Jones doesn't have a catch at this point in the time of the game. You know, he hardly been targeted. And so they've been somewhat successful at moving the ball down the field, but Jacoby Jones hadn't been part of the offense at that point.
Yeah. So he's on that third and five play at the Denver 31 with 3:22 to go. And that looked like maybe not the ball game because he had fourth and five, but it was an awfully important play. Then fourth and five, he threw incomplete to Pitta. I seem to remember that ball being a kind of a low throw, if I recall, that Pitta just couldn't quite dig out. Anyway, that's my visual memory. I may be thinking of another one, to be honest. And then Denver did get a first down on their drive. They got one on second down, and they just continued to run the drive. They ran the ball all five plays that they had it. They got the ball to the 47, punted, and the Ravens took over with 1:09 remaining in the game. Set us up a little bit and take us through the big play.
Yeah, so first down, I think they threw the ball. Maybe I think it was an incomplete pass. And then second and 10, Flacco decided if nobody was open. So Flacco ran the ball on a scramble, got to about the 30-yard line. They were obviously no timeouts left. Denver had two timeouts left. And so they were in no huddle. And so they set up real quick. They were in 11 personnel. So if you look on the right side, you had Jacoby Jones on the outside with Dennis Pitta on the inside slot there. On the left side, you had Torrey Smith on the outside, and I think Anquan Boldin was on the slot on the left side. And Denver was playing they were rushing three with eight back. So one of the middle linebackers ended up after the snap ended up covering Ray Rice as he entered the the middle of the coming into after moving past the offensive line. And then, so you had seven players that were pulling back, and Jacoby Jones on the outside, on the right side, was running a stutter and go. Carter, number 32, was the one that was covering him. He had gotten past him, I think 15 yards down the field. So about the 45-yard line, he had gotten past him, and he was running a stutter and go. And at that point, after he had run the stutter and was then going down the field. That's when Flacco stepped up into the pocket and was able then to throw the ball downfield. At that point, Raheem Moore, number 26, was the safety that was on that side. And what, as I was looking at that play several times, he had an option based upon where he was standing to go. He had to choose an angle on which the ball was thrown. And he chose a very short angle to be able to try to respond to the ball.
So much to unpack in what you just said. So,
hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist, and the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door, so now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code, or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock. After 1 second, you put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So many things happening on that same play, but couple things I'd respond to. The first was four vertical routes. So they had Ray Rice as an underneath guy. And I think Flacco probably had a pretty good chance to end up throwing to him there, but he actually identified the play, he said, based on how Moore was in terms of reacting, but he thought Moore was responding to an underneath route, which, what the hell is he doing there? And the guy who wouldn't let him forget about that is Dan Dierdorf. Dan Dierdorf was all over it. I love Dan Dierdorf's energy announcing a football game. I know there's a lot of fans who disagree with me on this, but he tells things in very straightforward terms. He's unbelievable technical asset. If you ever understood what the guy is doing behind the scenes, in particular with working with Dick Enberg, he's really the technical asset. Enberg is a nice voice. But the things he does at ground level, trying to understand the camera, telling him to go to a different camera, that kind of stuff, as he's reviewing a play to set up a highlight while they're at commercial, is Dierdorf was amazing at. Anyway, Dan really laid into more about that. Deep outside is deep outside. You know, that's his play. He can, I can hear his pleading voice, you know, as if he's a defender.
He wasn't deep enough. He should have been.
Yeah. The other thing is you mentioned the rush three and drop eight. And that's always a risk in these situations when defenses don't rush four. And they often do this. They often rush three. But when you do it, you typically allow the quarterback a path to walk back up in the pocket, which does two things. First of all, it extends the play. Second of all, it allows the release point to be as far forward as possible so that that ball can travel as far in the air. And that was a cold day. And even though it was Denver, That was a monstrous throw that went about 57 yards in the air, if I recall doing the calculation of the hypotenuse on the play. So it's a certain number of yards downfield and a certain yards to the right. And, you know, you calculate on, but in terms of the yards in the air, it was about 57 yards. We've seen some longer throws from Lamar, but it was still a remarkable throw that day for Flacco. And in particular with those freezing temperatures.
Where I calc'd it at was that, so Flacco threw, the play started from their own 30 yard line. And I think Jacoby Jones caught it at about the 19 yard line of the opposite team of the Broncos. So yeah, your high trajectory, you know, throw, caught it 50 yards down the field, and just a very poor angle taken by Raheem Moore at that point. Mm-hmm.
And Jones on the catching end, that was also a challenge there. Jacoby, obviously a punt return man most of his career, had always done that well. Not really known for his receiving skills, had a lot of drops in his career, frankly. But that ball took a similar trajectory to a punt where nobody tricky is trying to throw it. You know, basically you're throwing a spiral, so it's not Sam Cook with some end over end or weird English that's going to backspin the ball. It's just about as easy a punt as you can pick up. And if I believe it's very close, or it actually did scrape the front of his helmet as he came in and cradled the ball for the catch. It's one of these things where that was his helmet was actually something that got Jacoby Jones in trouble from time to time.
Well, especially if you look on early on from the game, right? That after the first touchdown that Denver scored on the subsequent kickoff, right? He fumbled the ball, so like his hands in that game weren't totally trustworthy. So the fact that he was able to make that catch, you know, may have surprised some individuals. Going into that play,
they ended up starting on the 6 yard line on that drive, and then they ended up scoring on the first long touchdown anyway to get the game tied. But yeah, Jacoby didn't have a great game to that point. He would certainly have a great Super Bowl. I don't remember him having any big contributions to the AFC Championship game, but I may be wrong about that. He may have had a couple of big catches that converted first downs or some such. It didn't score. And it was a postseason for the ages, nonetheless. It's one of the greatest Ravens offensive postseasons, even though it had just a few plays, kind of like Shannon Sharpe's 2000 in terms of being made up of just enormously game-changing plays on offense. And really is one of the best ones, after Flacco and probably after Sharpe in terms of a great offensive performances in a postseason.
Couldn't agree more.
Would you have given Jacoby Jones the MVP in the Super Bowl?
It'd have been very close, right? So he gets the long touchdown there. He gets the, obviously the punt return there, but it's hard to discredit Flacco in the way that he played throughout the entire postseason to not give him that as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the Flacco conversion on third and one to throw ahead, the other three touchdowns, no interceptions. Obviously, he managed the game just fine in terms of impacting a lot of plays. But that third and one play where he threw to Bolden for the first down, that really helped. It was one of those great.
The trust that he had in Bolden was immense. I mean, it's when they call him Joe Cool. I mean, I think it's that moment that did you realize that he was, you know, he was never phased. He was unflappable by certain people in certain situations.
I personally love the other nickname for this play. I much prefer the F-bomb to the Mile High Miracle. I don't like paying homage to the city. The Mile High Miracle has nothing to do with us. Why do we want that? You know, it's like it's somebody else is going to have a crab fest or something if they come to Baltimore. That's obviously not going to work unless it's a certain player or whatever. But I don't need Mile High to be part of it. If it was the F bomb, everybody's going to know what it was. And so I think the really good ones are named like that. They're not done otherwise. But anyway, it lost out pretty quickly. People were trying to stake their claim into what it was. But I was a big proponent of the F bomb.
You know what's funny, Ken, is after that play, what's really interesting is so with 30 seconds left to go, you know. they had Denver had two timeouts left. Yeah, you know, to be able to move the ball, and they kneeled the ball to be able to go to overtime. They didn't even give themselves a chance to try to like go down the field to like try to score. So it's like, you know, in a Super Bowl season, I think you have to be cognizant of the lucky moments. Like the team has to be more than just good. They have to be lucky in certain circumstances. Who knows what Peyton Manning had done in that last 30 seconds with two timeouts. So
absolutely. He wasn't having a great game though. And I think that the Broncos coach, I'm forgetting who that was at the time, but the Broncos coach said, this was a time where we were down. It's like we were on the canvas. We needed to get that game to overtime and just restart, you know? I really just don't agree with that. You're playing in Denver. You got a chance for a long field goal. You got a guy who had a history of long field goals there as your kicker. It just struck me as a very foolish decision. And Greg Gumbel, who did the game with Deardorff in this particular case, was all over him about it. He said, "Is it just me, or did they get very conservative over this?" And oddball choice in that choice.
Well, I'll just say it here in Wisconsin, having watched Aaron Rodgers fairly often, you know, to be able to see him move down the field with seconds left, it boggles my mind just to think that like they had a chance to do something with it, right? And they instead chose to go to overtime.
Well, good news for us and good news for Ravens fans everywhere, because the overtime period itself was a topic for another day, but just wonderful. Brian, just great having you on to talk about this. Got a really good understanding of the play and what went on in the game in general. Obviously, really appreciate how prepared you were coming into this. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do what Brian just did and go over a single play in Ravens history, you can be as prepared or not. You could be a little bit less, but know what you want to talk about in terms of the particular play. Know your own angle towards it. Know what you were doing at the time and why it was special to you or whatever else. You be you. Anyway, but I'd love to talk to as many people as possible about this series. We have a huge number of them planned for this offseason, but I can always take more. And a lot of the great plays have still not been taken. And I'll be posting a few every day on Twitter as options for people to still take among those that haven't been done. If you need a little prodding. But Brian, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. I really appreciate everything that you do. You made me a very smarter Ravens fan with everything that you've done. So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you for saying so. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.